Today's episode of the NBA Show on the Ringer Podcast Network is brought to you by State Farm. The moment we've all been waiting for is here. The official start of the NBA season. This offseason was filled with a lot of big changes and fresh starts. For the fresh starts in your life, talk to a State Farm agent so when it comes to insurance, you don't have to go at it alone. A lot of fresh starts just started yesterday with guys getting new contracts for the upcoming year. Buddy Hield, DeJounte Murray got a new contract, Sabonis got a new contract. There was a bunch of them, and we'll be talking about all of them. Talk to your State Farm agent today about combining your home and auto insurance and get a teammate who can help you prepare for the big changes in your life. State Farm. Welcome to the Ringer NBA Show. I'm Chris Vernon. Joining me as he does every Tuesday from theringer.com is Kevin O'Connor, a.k.a. Kevin O'Bomber, a.k.a. Kevin O'Concert, a.k.a. Kevin O'Croissant, a.k.a. Kevin O'Camera, Kevin O'Candyland, Kevin Opinionated. Kevin, the season is here.
Verno, we're here. Yes.
We are here. And unfortunately, the day before the season was going to begin, we were given some bad news. Last week, we had touched on a Zion Williamson possible injury, and it was kind of tamped down by the Pelicans when he did not travel to New York. They said it wasn't, you know, just regular rest, but that they were hopeful about what they would find out. In fact, what they found out was that he had a torn meniscus, and it is possible Zion Williamson could miss the first 2 months of the season. And so, though we expressed hope that this wouldn't be so bad, it was so bad, and this starts off very, very poorly.
It's very sad, man. I mean, I was excited for tonight, Raptors, Pelicans, to see Zion Williamson against the defending champions. But now with Zion, it's not only that this is going to hurt the Pelicans this season, playing without him for 6 to 8 weeks. Their playoff hopes are very muted now. But for me, it's, you know, the main thought, and as is, you know, for many others, how does this affect him long term? Where you have a young kid who is 6'6", 285 pounds, that puts a lot of force on his knees, already has a meniscus injury. When anytime you have a meniscus repair, can lead to long-term or short-term problems with arthritis or other issues that happen. So with Zion, it's scary, man. And I hope for him this is a one-time incident, as has been suggested to Shams Charania of The Athletic by his Pelican sources. But I'm not convinced of that. This is a very, very scary thing for one of the most promising young players in the game.
Well, because, and I know the easy thing to do was, oh, everybody knew he was carrying so much weight and he plays with so much force that, you know, that there was a real injury risk there, which we all saw. You know, when you see somebody of that size and that leaping ability, that you know, I mean, the big thing is this, right? He is not necessarily a great gauge for what is going to happen in the future when we line him up against other guys that have had this, right? Because it's really, we haven't seen anybody like him, but it would stand to reason that his knees have to hold up a lot better than the normal knee. That being said, they have for, you know, up to this point. And here's hoping that he can just come back, you know, indestructible and strong like LeBron has so many times.
It lasted 19 years. 19 years until a major injury.
Right. And so, and you see, I mean, how many times has he landed? Thousands, millions of times he has landed in all different manners. And so, and he's never been small. It wasn't like you look back at the old Zion Williamson tapes and he was some string bean. He's always been huge.
No, that's not true. That's not true. He was small and like as a freshman in high school. He gained over.
Yeah, but I'm talking about from the time that we were aware of him.
Yeah, I know. But yes, by the time, but that doesn't matter when we were aware of him. The fact is that in high school, he grew 5 inches and gained 100 pounds over the course of just a few years, which is abnormal for any human being to pack on that amount of weight in that short amount of time. And that's one of the theories of why there's risk for him moving forward. One of the theories of why there could be issues with him. Ultimately, the Pelicans are going to have to do a lot of preventative care. From what I've read from, you know, the stuff Jeff Stotts has done at In Street Clothes, what Brian Sutterer has done on YouTube talking about Zion. One of the keys for the Pelicans and their new staff with Aaron Nelson, who's one of the best in sports medicine in the world, it's going to be about whether it's cutting weight for Zion or doing certain stretches and exercises to strengthen his legs. They need to make sure that they're doing so much preventative care with Zion because of his just unique body, how he grew into this, and just the amount of weight and force that's going to be on those legs for not just whenever he gets back, but for the next, you hope, 10 to 15 years.
And that's the real hard part for, you know, the next couple of months, is because anybody, you know, non-professional athlete wise, but it does happen to professional athletes too, that when they get leg injuries, you have to work doubly hard in order to keep the weight down, because your level of activity just becomes so much lower. Everybody I know that has had knee surgery gained a bunch of weight, right? And then had to get rid of the weight later. Now, they are going to be monitoring this, and I'm sure he'll be on a bike and doing everything he can all the time. But it's hard to stay and be in really good shape, which is one of the, right? That was already something that people were talking about. It's hard to be in great shape when you've got to stay off a leg.
Also, you're in New Orleans.
When you can't be running.
Also, the food in New Orleans is pretty spectacular, man. When I was down there for All-Star Weekend in 2017, I'm like, I'm going to let myself eat this weekend.
That's right. No,
I gained like 8 pounds in 3 days.
It's the best. Oh, God. The food there is the absolute best. It's like when he first got drafted and there was that meme that was going around, and it was the guy from the N1 Tour, Escalade. And that picture of Escalade, and it was like Zion after 1 month of jambalaya and gumbo or something. I mean, prayers up for Zion Williamson's injury. Hopefully he can end up coming back stronger than ever. But it sucks to start off the season this way, especially when they put him on national TV 30 times.
You know, and look, the Pelicans without Zion are still a fun and interesting team. There's still a lot to look at on that roster and get excited about. I mean, it really sucks that we're not going to see Zion for all these games. But
that team without Zion gets 2 national TV games.
Yeah, I know. You're right. But like, it's still an interesting team to watch. You have Lonzo Ball. You have Nikhil Alexander-Walker in their backcourt next to 2 veterans and Drew Holiday and J.J. Redick. And then third and Etuan Moore, for that matter. Ingram, we'll see how he develops this season. Then you have Derek Favors, a rock-solid center. Kenrich Williams, a solid reserve. Jackson Hayes, we'll see how he performs as a rookie. Josh Hart, they have a lot of good players on this team, man, led by Drew Holiday. And you hope soon, Zion Williamson.
All right. Before we get into all of the big news, including some news around a player that you just suggested about, NBA Palooza is going on all day. So if you're checking out this podcast, make sure you check out The Ringer and their YouTube channel. I know there's a 30-minute desktop that is dropping today with Jason Concepcion. Emmy award-winning desktop, and all kinds of content. So make sure you check out theringer.com and the YouTube channel for everything that is dropping on this day that the NBA season debuts. You mentioned Brandon Ingram, and while there are a lot of announcements about guys getting contract extensions yesterday, Brandon Ingram was not one of them. Were you surprised that amongst many draft picks from that class, Simmons had already gotten his, Jamal Murray had already gotten his, and we'll get to all of the other players that did. Were you surprised that Brandon Ingram was one that did not get an extension?
No.
Why?
Not at all. I it's like we talked about last week. I tend to lean towards the side with the teams that you want to just see these guys play the full season and then head into restricted free agency. There's no reason to pay Brandon Ingram upwards of $25+ million before you see him get better within your system and see how he adapts next to his new personnel, new teammates. And if there's any improvement over the course of the season as well, you want to see that 3-point shot continue to get better. You want to see him continue to do what he's done for quite a while now, is be an effective defender. You want to see him become a consistently good or great defender. I think with Ingram, there's no reason to pay him now, which is like the flip side of this is Boston giving the money right now to Jaylen Brown, the 103 over 4 years with $8 million in unlikely incentives and $4 million in likely incentives, that's a lot of money, man. $103 million guaranteed for Jaylen Brown when he still is not exactly worth that contract, but you hope he grows into it. There's no reason to give that now necessarily, other than you're just showing loyalty to the player.
What if the money goes up?
I would be sort of surprised, and but I do think with Jaylen, there's a
it's a light free agent class, right? So the teams that have money, there's a chance that would happen.
And yeah. But fact is that there's also a chance that it wouldn't. And with Jaylen, I think for Boston, this is at least a sign that they at least have intentions to keep moving forward. But it also allows them to, it makes, I think, someone like Gordon Hayward a bit more expendable. If Hayward next summer is the guy who opts out into free agency after a good season, suddenly he could be like the number one or number two free agent in, like you said, a very, very weak class. And so Boston at least locks up one of their guys.
I mean, we saw Tatum and Brown play really well together, right? The thing in that is that they spent a ton of money on Hayward. And so I do think this is a little bit of a hedge on, okay, the long-term future we want to be wrapped up in Jaylen Brown. And we will see this Gordon Hayward thing through. But we know that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum can be good side by side. And here's the thing. Look, I'm still, it's not an island because a lot of people still like Jaylen Brown, but I'm still in on Jaylen Brown. He's played 3 years in the league. And the other thing, he's gotten better in the playoffs.
It's a whole continent. I mean, people love Jaylen Brown.
He's gotten better in the playoffs. I mean, 47%, 39%, and average 18-5 over 18 playoff games. You know, 2 years ago, and then last year the numbers were good too.
Like, he's a good player. He's a very good defender. He's a rock solid offensive player who hits spot up threes at an average rate. Tends to make the right play. He's a good player. The fact is he's getting money that tends to go to great players, and so for Boston, they're probably banking on him taking a leap. And you know, I would not rule that out at all. Jalen's a good player, and who's still only 22, about to turn 23 years old.
Yeah. I would tell you that Jalen,
the other side of it, you're investing in the person too, and he's a high character kid who works really, really hard too. So,
Kevin, there's a lot of great players that have showed a lot less than Jaylen Brown in their first three seasons. That's what I'd tell you.
Yeah, right? I would agree with that.
And so being thrown into big minutes early in your career can sometimes, you know, like I remember when Donovan Mitchell was getting beat up last year during the playoffs. I'm thinking to myself, like, he is carrying the offensive load as a second year player. I mean, it used to be that second year players might not even get minutes in playoff series. Certainly first year players wouldn't be getting minutes in playoff series. I mean, I remember years back, there was a thing, because, you know, fans always love their young players to get to play, right? And so the Grizzlies had a Jordan Adams was who ended up, you know, because of injuries flaming out in the NBA, but he was on the team. And I remember there was this big groundswell of they should be playing Jordan Adams. And I went and looked it up during the NBA playoffs. And this is several years back now. But I remember looking it up, and the only player that was a rookie that was getting minutes in the playoffs that year was a guy who had not even played much during the regular season. And it was Clint Capella for the Houston Rockets who was playing in the playoffs. Of all the teams, he was the only one getting minutes. Now think about that in conjunction with what we do now. First and second year players are littered all over the playoffs, right? So times have changed. And so somewhere along the way, I guess we've become less patient with what these guys will end up being, you know, 5, 6, 7 years into their career. Because in many cases, a lot of the great players, they weren't logging big minutes in their first 2 years, much less in big playoff spots. And so when you've got a guy who averaged 18 points a game in over 18 playoff games in his second year in the league, give me a break. I would bank on that all day.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of guys that'll play playoff games and never average 18.
I'm with you. I'm with you in that sense. I think what I opened up with in regards to Jalen was just the act of paying the guy before you see that leap. But the logic in doing that is, as you hit on last week in regards to Buddy Hield, the logic in that is you show loyalty to the player. You maintain a strong relationship with the player. And like you just said today, you do get him at a lower number than the max, which it's possible that he would have gotten that next summer, signed an offer sheet for the max, and Boston would have had to match that in order to keep him. Whereas now, for Boston, in the first year of that deal, it's 23.8. Second year is 25.8. Third year is 27.7. Third year is 29. Fourth year is 29.6. For Boston, those first 2-3 years are very tradable contracts. So for Boston, you keep a guy that you like and that has shown signs of success, and you have him at a salary number that is in a good slot to trade for guys at slightly less total value or slightly more, like max level players. So for Boston, they continue to retain flexibility as much as they can, not having the pile of draft picks they once had, but in terms of having a more tradable high value asset in Jalen Brown, who you want to keep ideally, but also retains value as a potential trade asset.
Yeah, speaking of Buddy Hield, I got to give the Kings credit because they got it done. I don't know why they let it get to the point that they let it get to. But in the end, they got it done. Man. 4 for $86 with $20 million in incentives. He was one of two players in the NBA that averaged over 20 points a game and shot over 42% from three. And it was him and Steph Curry last year. And so I don't need to go on a diatribe about how good I think Buddy Hield is, especially in the current NBA, but I thought it was outrageous that, you know, he's to the point where he has insulted and talking trade. But then when push came to shove, they got it done and then laden it with these incentives. It's also front loaded, right? So
yeah, that part's interesting.
It goes down as the years go on, enabling them to theoretically have the money to sign De'Aaron Fox when they need to, and to sign Marvin Bagley when they need to, with the expectation that those guys fulfill their potential. That being said, with the Buddy Hield contract being signed, it now leaves Bogdanovich out there, who could play out the season and obviously get more next offseason. He turned down the extension that they offered him. He becomes an extremely interesting trade piece to me, because they're not going to have the money to pay him. And he's going to be able to command a lot in what is a drought of a free agent class. And he is a very good player. And so I look at Bogdanovich out there and I think they could get really good return on him and not do the whole, well, we get nothing out of it. You know, he just walks in free agency next summer. I would not be surprised if now that, you know, once Beal signed his deal, you're looking around at perimeter guys and he's not going to play a huge role. I mean, he's their sixth man, but I mean, Bojan Bogdanovich could start for a lot of teams, Kevin. And so I think that's trade asset.
You mean Bogdanovich.
Bogdan. Yeah. What'd I say? Bojan?
Yeah, yeah.
Bogdan.
Yeah, with Bogdanovich, I mean, I love that dude. It's hard not to love a guy that just has no conscience in clutch moments. He plays his role and accepts his role as a sixth man. And look, they could sign him next summer, but your point is that he's a guy who could be a candidate to be quote-unquote overpaid, where for Sacramento, it's not worth it to match that offer sheet. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, I think he can get starter money next offseason.
20 plus million.
It is not worth it to them to sign him to starter money.
The thing is there's not a lot of money out there next summer. Some of the teams that do have money, such as Atlanta, they could create, I believe, 60 plus, 70 plus million dollars in cap space. Is Atlanta a team that's going to invest long term in some of these guys, or are they going to continue being patient? I'm not sure. I don't know the answer to that. But there's not a lot of teams with money, is my point.
Yeah, but there's just a few guys that are out there. Malik Beasley and Bogdanovich, really. I mean, Ingram's going to be out there too, but I'm saying there's not there's not a ton. I mean, that it was part of what happened yesterday. A bunch of those guys signed extensions, even all the way to down to Taurean Prince. And so one of the tenets that I talk about all the time that I feel like I've learned, you know, through the years of covering the NBA is your mistakes are rarely paying good players. It is overpaying guys that do not help you win or guys that flat out suck. And you have Buddy Hield, Jaylen Brown, Sabonis, DeJounte Murray, Taurean Prince, Joe Ingles all signed contract extensions yesterday. And inevitably there are people out there that are like, oh, that's an overpay. Oh, that's an overpay. Like, I'm not worried about these guys getting overpaid. I figured there would be one of them that I would be like, what the hell? I really wasn't with any of these, Kevin. I wasn't. I think all of these players are good. And if I were the teams, I would commit to them. Hield, Brown, Sabonis, Murray, Prince, Ingles. Is there any of those deals you wouldn't have done?
No.
Maybe the Jaylen one you wouldn't have.
I think the Jaylen one's fine. It is a slight overpay for what he is within your system now.
That Sabonis deal is great. I think he is fantastic. 4 for 77.
I still don't think it changes things for Indiana this year in terms of how you're approaching the season. Like, they have a good roster. They added 2 spark plug scorers and TJ Warren and Jeremy Lamb next to what, you know, if Oladipo comes back, you have a really strong backcourt with Oladipo and Brogdon that should lock down teams on the defensive end. And if Oladipo is himself on offense, which is no guarantee, I love the way that Brogdon-Oladipo backcourt operates, with Brogdon enhancing Oladipo as a reliable on-ball presence. But still in the front court, the Turner-Sabonis fit, Chris, still isn't perfect. Those guys, if you have both of them on the floor at the same time, Turner is at his best when he is protecting the rim, when he's staying on the interior. And Sabonis is a liability defending on the perimeter. And you don't want to have to put Turner out there, because that minimizes what he does best. So you stagger those guys as much as you can. But ultimately, there comes a time where they have to play together. And still, that's one of the reasons why they reportedly shopped him, according to Sam Amick from The Athletic. Do they at some point flip Sabonis or Turner? I think at some point you do.
That's why I say this is a really good contract, because last offseason, let me pull this up. They signed Turner 4 years, 72. This year, they just signed this kid to 4 years, 77. I mean, those are both, you know, totally reasonable deals for those two players on average. And so, because they have those deals signed, those are exceedingly, if it doesn't work, right? And they're still both young. But if you don't like the pairing, those are insanely tradable contracts. I just like that they got those deals done. It wasn't like they paid them $120 million. You know what I mean? They got both those guys for $149 total, I think. If you go 72-77 over 2 years, that's not bad.
No. No, they're both really, really good players, and I especially,
and they could both get a lot better.
Yeah, and Miles Turner specifically is if he ups his minutes and if he continues making little enhancements on the defensive end, particularly defending the posts, he's a defensive player of the year candidate at some point in his career. The upside is there for him to reach that level. And Sabonis is a really, really good playmaking hub for you. Not a high assist guy, but he makes smart plays, makes quick decisions. And he good finisher around the rim. And hopefully he extends his range from deep mid-range to three-point land. But Sabonis is a really rock-solid player too. Still only 23 and should continue to get better.
Last week, we brought up in our preseason box score musings, I mentioned DeJounte Murray, who missed all of last season, and so he's kind of out of sight, out of mind, has had a good preseason so far, but after his second year in the league, a year in which he had made second team all defense, a lot of people were expecting a big breakout year, that he was the future of the San Antonio Spurs as Tony Parker had moved on, and he lost all of last season when he blew out his ACL and he did not play last year. And then he still got the contract. 4 years, $64 million for DeJounte Murray. Now, if he would have had the year that many people expected him to have last year. That number is much higher, stands to reason. But what do you think of 464 for Murray?
It feels to me like we could look at this years from now and think, boy, what a bargain that is. That's my initial thought. That for DeJounte Murray, that we could look at this and think it's a bargain. He looked really good in preseason, as he always does on the defensive end of the floor. Offense, he looked really good passing the ball, playmaking. He looked like he, again, picked up where he left off when we last saw him healthy in the 17-18 season. With the jumper, I mean, we'll see. It looked okay. He didn't shoot a lot of shots from outside, but that has always been the question and is for him today and will be the question moving forward. And that's what ultimately determines not only his value as a player and whether that contract is a bargain or whether it's fair or what, but for, it also determines San Antonio's upside moving forward when you have DeMar DeRozan, LaMarcus Aldridge, with the ability potentially to be free agents next summer. When you have an older supporting cast with Rudy Gay and Patty Mills and Damari Carroll, they have a really good team this year. But they're entering a crossroads here where it's, do you build young or do you continue building with this pretty rock solid potential playoff roster that could maybe add a guy or flip a young player to get somebody else? DeJounte is the guy who really determines how good this team can be moving forward as they go through a transition from their older core players like DeRozan and Aldridge.
Well, and I'll tell you another one that always comes to mind when I'm looking at their stuff for the upcoming season is, and again, you can say, people can say what they want about Summer League and whether or not it is indicative of what guys are going to become, but it's two Summer Leagues in a row where I went to games and I watched the game and I thought Lonnie Walker is better than everybody on this court by a wide margin, you know? And there've been Derek White moments, for sure over the last 2 years. And I saw, who was the kid in Utah this year? Keldon Johnson. He looked very good. I mean, they've got a bunch of young guys, young perimeter guys. Some of those guys.
Derek White, you know, Bryn Forbes is still young. Lyles getting a flyer on him. They have a lot of young talent in San Antonio.
I know. And this Keldon Johnson looked pretty good. I tell you this, he looked better in the Utah Summer League than he ever did at Kentucky, to me. So we'll see. And we know they've got a pretty good track record of being able to evaluate talent and get guys in the second half of the draft.
Would you put San Antonio in the playoffs?
Yes.
You would? So, how high is the seed? We're talking 7, 8?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're probably 5 through 8 somewhere. I mean,
they're tough.
People can crap on DeRozan and Aldridge all they want. Those are still two of the top, what? How far do you want to go down the list? 30 players in the league? I mean, if you got two guys like that, and then I like Trey Lyles. I thought that was a really good signing.
I don't know.
And perfect for them.
I guess 30.
Damari Carroll's a role guy.
Maybe 40, something like that.
I mean, you ain't getting that far down, though.
Yeah, no.
Those guys have been perennial all-stars.
With DeRozan is my question. With Aldridge, I think Aldridge is a severely underrated overall player.
Well, I mean, Rudy Gay was fantastic last year for them. And
Rudy Gay,
you know,
was awesome.
I like the Trey Lyles signing. I mean, hell, they were a minute away from knocking off Denver last year. So, I mean, let's not act like this team wasn't good. They were a good team last year. And you add DeJounte Murray into that mix. You know, they added some real players in free agency. Damari Carroll will have some moments for them, and Trey Lyles will have some moments for them. Come on, betting against them has just been a fool's errand. I mean, they're going to have... listen, I'm not going to be the guy that says that this is the end for the Spurs. Like, it's going to have to happen first, and then I'll talk about it. But that team has been buried so many times over the last 20 years, it's unbelievable. They were buried after they lost to the Grizzlies as a 8 versus a 1 seed. Buried. They had to move on from Parker, Duncan, and Ginobili. And, you know, within 2 years, they're playing the most beautiful basketball that's ever been known to man.
For sure.
So,
I know you're an avid reader, Chris. Did you read any of my NBA season preview series, the power rankings tiers? I'm curious what your thoughts are on what I said about the Spurs, because I think with them, I touched on the article that I wrote in 2017 or 2018, whatever year it was. It was, let me pull it open just to make sure I get it right. In 2018, I wrote the article with the headline, "No, seriously, this time, is this the end of the Spurs dynasty?" And in that article, I basically just outlined how the Spurs were approaching a crossroads with Kawhi, you know, his status being injury prone. They didn't have much young talent at that point, and their core was super, super old. And I look at where they were then in May or March of 2018 and look at them now, and I'm impressed at how much young talent they've infused on their team. And I feel a level of confidence in this team now that I was unsure of then, that they're going to be okay moving forward. Whether they're winning championships and competing for championships, who knows, man? That remains to be seen. But I do think this team at least has stability to be competitive moving forward. And it's about what other decisions they make between now and that point. Like I said, with DeRozan being 30, player option for next season, Aldridge at 34 has only a partially guaranteed deal for next season, and some other older players, what they do with them, it's going to be really fascinating to watch. Do they continue staying afloat as like a borderline playoff team, or at some point they just pull the plug on that and either invest in other veterans on the market? Maybe there's somebody that goes after restricted free agents, or are they a team that just goes young for a while and has some bad years, but at least optimistic years because of their young talent?
I doubt that they'll do that. Or at least if they do it, Greg Popovich won't be around for it.
It's almost like they're staying competitive with Pop, because with Pop, you always get a shot. And I think for them, what they're doing right now makes total, complete sense. And I feel more confidence in them than I did then. But they're still at that crossroads. They still haven't gone through yet.
I do think that they just have to be bad before I'll believe it. You know, they haven't been yet. So I'd expect the playoff streak to continue. But at some point it will end.
Of course, it always ends at some point.
Yep. All right, let's get to a couple other things that have taken place over the last 24 hours. Steve Kerr commented on Klay Thompson. And we also had Kevin Durant on Serge Ibaka's cooking show.
How hungry are you? That's a great show. What a great concept.
It is a good show. He said that Steph Curry was better than Russell Westbrook, which is not controversial at all.
It's like Captain Obvious.
Well, I'll get to it in a moment. Let's get to the Kerr thing. It appears Kerr said that I suppose we should get in our heads that it's totally possible Klay Thompson does not play this year in the NBA season, and by all accounts, Kevin Durant is not going to be playing in the NBA this season, right?
Yeah, it would be surprising if KD played. As for Klay Thompson, it's interesting. When I was on Bill's pod last week, he seemed to have a sense from what he had heard. I'm not sure from who, but he had heard. I'm saying, like,
you want me to take a guess?
Well, I mean, that's what I'm getting at. Steve Kerr said to Logan Murdoch on the record. Steve Kerr said this weekend that he said you have to look at it realistically. I had an ACL tear in college and I missed the whole season. Generally, an ACL for a basketball player is a full year recovery. It's a full year for Klay. That puts him out for the season. We've kind of left the door open in case the rehab goes perfectly and the doctors say he can go. But the reality is, on April 1st, that's a 9-month mark. April versus 9 months post-op for ACL. Long story short, he's saying it's unlikely that Klay does play this coming season, which again, Kev, it aligns almost exactly with what Bill said to me last week about there being doubt and a lack of confidence that he would be rushed back. Because, you know, as Tom Haverstraw has pointed out in his research with Jeff Stotts from In Street Clothes, the average recovery time is 330 days. And that would put him at June for Klay.
And we just covered a guy in DeJounte Murray.
Yep.
I mean, he hurt himself in the preseason last year.
For sure.
And, you know, cleared within the last month or two. I mean, this is not, and especially after what happened with KD in the playoffs, there's just absolutely no, because you would be bringing him back. Theoretically, you would bring him back if you were in the playoff mix. I mean, no way. In that kind of high pressure, high leverage situation, that's not when you want to be coming back from injury. That's like the soonest he would be available. And is that really where you want to throw him in the mix?
Yeah.
God, of course. That would be terrible. So probably know him. And then you have Michael Jordan doing an interview this morning.
Oh, geez.
And he said that Steph Curry is not a Hall of Famer. Now,
yet.
That quote went out, not a Hall of Famer yet. That quote went out everywhere. And I will imagine that by the time this podcast posts, there will have been a clarification from Michael Jordan, which is, hey, while everybody wanted to jump on me for being such a damn hater, the truth is, all I meant was he's not in the Hall of Fame yet. Like, you do have to retire and get into the Hall of Fame. I would be absolutely stunned if Michael Jordan doesn't believe that Steph Curry is a Hall of Famer. Not to mention he has to face his dad every home game, right? Dell still calls their games. So, and they probably play golf all the time together. And so that felt like either a little bit of needling or a little bit of just, hey, you know, you don't get to call yourself a Hall of Famer until you actually stood on the podium and been inducted into the Hall of Fame. Like, just some old man stuff. But it is one of those that looks way worse in print than it does when you watch the video, which I did this morning. And he was drinking tequila, by the way.
I know.
During the interview.
He was definitely a little buzzed towards the end
but
of it.
Look, anybody that knows this, and I am a Jordan for life guy, he is the biggest friggin' hater ever. So even if he did act like Clay isn't a Hall of Famer, I mean, he spent his whole Hall, anybody can go back and watch it, he spent his whole Hall of Fame speech, you know, trashing everyone that ever, you know, bet against him.
One thing I'm curious about, last season, Doc Rivers got fined $50,000 for comparing Kawhi Leonard to Michael Jordan. It was considered, you know, tampering. Does this count as tampering with Michael Jordan?
Saying he's not a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, does this count? Yeah. Like, does this count as tampering? Is MJ about to get fined?
No, I don't believe so. But here's what I think: he could go sell 100 pairs of shoes and pay the fine anyway.
Yeah, you know what true, I mean? Of course.
I don't think he's particularly. My sense is that Michael Jordan wouldn't be too worried about money, but I'm not in. I don't have access to all of his finances. But he is.
We just know he owns a basketball team. Yeah, he has the highest selling shoe ever.
Yeah, he is a. Look. He's one of those that it looks worse in print than when you see the interview. I think it could be misconstrued.
I don't really care. I mean, it's like yesterday and this morning on Twitter, everybody's getting pissed off at like top 100 singers ever list, which was published like 9 years ago from I'm not sure where. And everybody was arguing about the list. And it's like,
I didn't see this.
Who cares? Just
who was listed? Now I'm interested. Who was listed number one?
All right, Rolling Stone published the top 100 singers list. This was like 9 years ago they published it. Number one, Aretha Franklin. Two, Ray Charles, Elvis Presley, Sam Cooke, John Lennon, Marvin Gaye, Bob Dylan, Otis Redding, Stevie Wonder, James Brown, Paul McCartney, Little Richard, Roy Orbison, Al Green, Robert Plant, Mick Jagger, Tina Turner, Freddie Mercury, Bar Marley, Smokey Robinson, Johnny Cash.
Right, I'm mad about the list now.
Etta James, David Bowie, Van Morrison, then at 25, Michael Jackson.
Whitney Houston?
34.
What the hell?
Who else do you want to know? Neil Young is 37, which I love Neil Young, but top 100 singers, I'm not sure.
Neil Young? Oh, for goodness sake. And I know I'm going to get the people out there that say I don't get it. He sounds terrible.
No, he doesn't sound terrible.
He does sound terrible. He is a great songwriter, a great musician. But if I listened to that guy on the street, if he was playing in my backyard, I wouldn't raise my blinds. If a guy was singing like Neil Young, with a heart of stone, I'd be like, shut up. If it was a guy not named Neil Young that sounded like Neil Young, I would walk out. Anyways, we got to take a quick break when we come back. The NBA season is upon us. Enough about singers. Three bold predictions for the upcoming NBA season. We know you want our bold predictions. We've got them on the other side. Today's episode of The Mismatch is brought to you by Roman. With 2/3 of guys experiencing noticeable hair loss by age 35, most guys assume losing their hair is inevitable as they age. Some don't care, some just shave their heads, some embrace hats. But what they don't know is there's an FDA-approved medication designed to stop hair loss and even regrow hair. That's why we're excited to partner with our sponsor, Roman. Roman makes it easy to get safe, FDA-approved hair loss treatment all from your phone or computer. And when you go to GetRoman.com/RingerNBA, your visit online is free. Consult with a U.S. licensed physician through their secure online platform. No awkward conversations with receptionists or reading bad magazines in the waiting room. Once your doctor ensures that treatment will be safe and effective for you, Roman's dedicated pharmacy can ship your medication to you with free 2-day shipping in discreet packaging. If you're noticing unwanted hair loss, starting treatment early is key, and Roman can help. And today, Roman is giving the Ringer NBA show listeners a free online visit at GetRoman.com/RingerNBA. That's GetRoman.com/RingerNBA for a free visit to get started. Go to GetRoman.com/RingerNBA. Today's episode of The Mismatch is also brought to you by Privacy.com. When it's game day, you can't be fumbling your wallet to pay for your food order or worrying about online security when paying for tickets to the next game. Privacy.com is the best way to pay for anything online because it keeps your identity totally safe and secure. Privacy.com is different because it uses virtual cards instead of real ones. This is a free tool that will help you manage your financial life online without sharing your real banking information. When we buy things online, we also give personal info not only to merchants, but also to their data partners without our clear consent. But Privacy.com uses military-grade encryption, and they won't sell your data or charge interest and annual fees. And Privacy.com's Chrome extension will autofill your virtual card information, so it's incredibly easy. Head to Privacy.com/NBA to sign up. New customers will automatically get $5 to spend on their first purchase. Yep, that's free money for any online purchase. Go to Privacy.com/NBA and sign up now. All right, Kevin, 3 bold predictions for the upcoming NBA season, which begins tonight. We have Raptors, Pelicans. We have Clippers, Lakers. Are you going to go to Clippers, Lakers?
I will be there. I'm excited.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All right. You want me to start?
Sure. Do your thing.
Number one on my bold predictions. The Nets will be worse this year than they were last year. And Kyrie will mess up a second straight team. I just don't believe in him as a leader. I don't believe in him when things start going bad, going in the locker room and then doing his whole, I know how to win and you don't know how to win, montage. I think that all of those guys, that team looked like the happiest team on earth last year when they had D'Angelo Russell and when they had, you know, all those good veterans, Jared Dudley and Damari Carroll and Ed Davis and on, and they're pretty deep. And now you have Caris LeVert and Joe Harris and Spencer Dinwiddie. You have they might have their numbers go down. I do like Taurean Prince, who they added. Kirk's pretty good. Jared Allen will probably be a little salty about losing his job to DeAndre Jordan. But they don't have, they got about 5 or 6 good players and a couple really, really good ones. But I just don't believe in it. I don't believe in Kyrie as a leader. Now, it's a hard thing to say because they only won 42 games last year. But I just think if they hit a rough patch, that you could have these guys that are not having, they were all on this upward trajectory. And I just saw a team with young players that were all on an upward trajectory just become nothing like what I thought they would be. And so here's thinking that with Kevin Durant not there this year, that this actually does not go very well. And so I think the Nets will be worse than they were last year.
Do they miss the playoffs?
It's going to be close. They'll probably get in at the very tail end because I'm not sure that, 500 or much under is not going to get in. Seriously. I mean, once you get past this is who I would bank on being playoff teams. Boston, Philly, the Raptors, the Pacers, the Bucks, the Heat. So that gets me to six. And then I think I would say Orlando and Detroit. So yeah, they could. I think they'll be in the mix with Orlando and Detroit.
It would not shock me, but I think with them, I tend to lean towards the side that I like their entire roster. You know, like forget about Kyrie for a moment. And
I don't
look at the rest of their team. I think Caris LeVert is a strong candidate to be most improved player of the year. All the players that you listed, a lot of talent on that team that fits together well.
Five players I listed.
But then you throw in Kyrie Irving on top of that.
Yeah, but you got 15 on a roster, Kev.
Yeah.
The back half of their roster is crap. Give me 7 through 10.
Joe Harris. David Nwaba.
Stop.
Jared Allen.
I named him.
DeAndre Jordan. Garrett Temple.
Go run in traffic.
Come on, man.
You come on!
Garrett Temple is like a eighth man? What's wrong with that? Garrett Temple, he was good last year in Memphis. Ultimately, though, so you don't like their 8 through 15. You also don't like Kyrie as their number one right now.
That's right.
I envision Kyrie having a similar year one in Brooklyn that he had a year one in Boston, which was quite good, where he did have good chemistry with his teammates, where there was no issues in the locker room. There was no chemistry problems. And then he just happened to get hurt. And I would imagine in Kenny Atkinson's pick and roll heavy system with two strong role men in DeAndre Jordan and Jared Allen, with secondary ball handlers like Dinwiddie and LeVert, that this team has the players to enhance Kyrie in the pick and roll. And they also have the players who can handle the ball. And,
so you do not agree with this
Kyrie's
bold prediction.
Off ball potency.
You do not believe in this bold prediction. You do not agree with this.
I do not believe in it, no.
Okay. I am unsurprised, right? Anything that is the least bit negative, you don't agree with. Number one on your bold predictions.
I'm gonna do one to make you happy.
Oh.
Ja Morant leads the NBA in assists and wins Rookie of the Year.
Leads in assists?
Leads the NBA in assists. What do you think about that? That's probably more bold than the
rookie of the year is not bold.
Yeah,
he's the favorite
bold.
Now.
Yeah, that's not
he's
bold.
He's the favorite now. The assist thing is a little, that is bold.
Can I explain
I'm
why?
To think, who led the league in assists last year?
Harden. So with Harden, right, I think Westbrook is going to cut into that a little bit.
No. You think?
He's going to cut it. Harden, did he lead? No, Westbrook led last year. I'm sorry.
Snap!
Westbrook,
by two,
I flipped it in my mind. Westbrook led last year, so Westbrook's total is going to get cut into by Harden, just like Harden's is going to get cut into by Westbrook's. You don't have John Wall playing this year. LeBron, he's the question to me. Does LeBron have a year where he elevates his assists to a career high level? And that's possible. In preseason, he was passing a lot. But with Ja Morant, if you look at his per-minute numbers, you consider how much he's going to have the ball in his hands with how he was utilized in preseason, how you'd expect him to be utilized moving forward. You factor in the fact that he's a pass-first player, more so than the perimeter scoring player that you hope he turns into at some point. Jaren Jackson in that system as a pick-and-pop option or pick-and-roll option. Brandon Clark is a pick and roll option. I think Ja Morant is just going to rack up assists this season, and I'm not sure many guys will crack 10. I think Morant could be right there.
All right, Ja Morant leads the NBA in assisted wins Rookie of the Year. I have got a rookie for my second. So the most three pointers by a rookie was set just a few years ago by Donovan Mitchell, 187. He topped Damian Lillard's 185. That record will be broken this year by Tyler Herro. He will have the most three-pointers of a rookie ever. 187 is not ridiculous. He shot 26 of 56 in five games during the preseason. So he is shooting an intensely high volume and has been hitting them. And so I'm in on him. that record is one of those that could be up for grabs probably every year every with the way the game has changed. Yeah, with the way the game has changed. I mean, but in fairness, Luka last year was the leading rookie, and he had 168. So it's not easy. He had 168, and he played a lot of minutes last year. So, I mean, that's 19 less. You know, he would have had to hit 20 more to get to break Donovan's record. But I think Harrow, maybe Carson Edwards, hell, if he hits 9 a quarter every once in a while, he's going to have a crack at it. So anyway, that is a bold prediction that that rookie three-point record gets set this year by the kid in Miami.
So that relates to my second one. And this is not a team-specific one. It's a league-wide one. I think this is the season that people began seriously questioning if rules need to be changed to curtail the amount of three-pointers. This year in preseason, 40.6% of shot attempts by NBA teams were three-pointers, up from last preseason when it was 35.6%, up from last season, 35.9%. That number, we'll see where it lands over the season. It could be around 40%. 4 out of 10 shots could be three-pointers. And I think this season, it's going to be a lot more conversation about basketball. I think there's going to be not quite as many trade rumors involving notable names looking at the market with Beal signing an extension. Maybe a Kevin Love pops up, but I'm not sure there's going to be as much drama in the trade market. I think there's going to be more talk about strict basketball. And I think sort of on the heels of Kirk Goldsberry's book about the change in the game, on the fact that you have someone like Seth Partnow back in the NBA Twitterverse, now working for The Athletic after time with the Milwaukee Bucks, I think you're going to have that conversation driven this season about whether there's too many threes, more than we've talked about in recent years. And it's always been a conversation, but I think we're nearing that point where feels like it's a bit too much. And I'm not there yet. I love the way the game looks. I love the way the game flows right now. I love all the spacing. However, I think there does come a point where it becomes too much. I'm not sure where that is, but I think we're nearing the point where the conversation at least really ramps up.
Well, and if we aren't, you can just write an article about it and make it a conversation.
Yeah, I hope to. I don't want to say the idea here, but I have an idea that I've been kicking around since last season that I didn't get to late in the season like I wanted to, but hopefully this year I'll be able to do it.
All right, last one. And this is just a, you know, look, you were low on Harrow, so I had to stick it to you on that. This is the ultimate. Number three, the most improved player in the league will be Marvin Bagley.
Oh.
And he averages 20 and 10 this season for Sacramento. And DeAndre Ayton going number one looks more and more and more laughable by the second. Marvin Bagley wins most improved, goes over 20 and 10 as averages this upcoming season.
20 and 10.
Yes.
Interesting.
He goes 20. He averages over 20 points and 10 rebounds a game and wins most improved in the NBA.
In preseason, just to give your prediction some support here, in preseason, he averaged per 36 minutes 24 points and 13 rebounds.
And he ran circles around Rudy Gobert in the game that they played against Utah. All right, last one.
MVP. I'm picking Steph Curry. I'm just rolling with it. I think the Warriors are going to be good. Whether Klay returns or not, I think they're going to make the playoffs as like a 6 seed or something like that. And I think you look around the league at other potential candidates. Obviously, Giannis, he's going to be right there. And boy, it's hard for me not to pick Giannis Antetokounmpo as MVP. If you look at the Lakers, LeBron and AD are going to split votes. You look at Houston. Voters, I mean, it's just the facts. Voters, you included, Chris, as a critic of the game, do not like James Harden. That is a factor here. And voters, we talked about this last week during our ad we did. Voters love Stephen Curry.
Yeah,
and he's going to have the story and he's going to have the stats.
Well, it has to be a historic season. The only way you win that award is if you have a historic season like when Westbrook had the triple-double, and there were still ninnies like you saying he shouldn't win it. Other than
because Harden was better that season.
Okay, well, you have to be one of the top two teams in either conference. That's what history tells us. We'll it's the see. Best player on one of the best teams. And if you're telling me they're not going to be one of the best teams, then you've got to tell me he has to have a historically profound
So here's what I would say. I think what we're going to see is he's going to put up Harden-esque numbers, historic numbers, which Harden did last year, averaging 36 points with insane levels of efficiency. It just so happened Harden was going against Giannis Antetokounmpo, who arguably should have been Defensive Player of the Year and MVP. And for Curry, I think Giannis, I'm not even sure this is really bold. Curry is like second or third in MVP odds. But I think the more bold pick here is Golden State making the playoffs as like a 5 or 6 seed, winning 48 games, Curry having a historic year.
And that's what their over-under is in Vegas.
Yeah, I know, which seems high.
Like nothing about what you're saying is bold.
It's fine. Should I give my other one real quick?
This is the most mild-ass take I've ever heard in my life.
How is it mild? I don't see any... I am picking the second favorite to win the MVP. But I don't see any people really picking Steph as MVP. I see a lot of Giannis. I see a lot of LeBron. I see a lot of Kawhi. I do not see many people predicting Stephen Curry as MVP.
What was your other one? Is there something you got some sizzle on?
And, yeah, I don't even know if I believe what I'm saying, but Chris Paul gets traded.
That's not bold either.
How is this not bold? He's getting paid like $35 million for 3 more seasons. He's old as hell.
Because it's been in the rumor mill for the last 6 months.
Yeah, but nobody, who really thinks they're going to trade Chris Paul?
Everybody!
There's so few teams that need a point guard.
Well, it's not because they don't want to. It's because they can't find a trade partner.
Yeah,
yet.
Exactly. And my prediction is like the one or two teams that could need one, do it.
No, something bold would be like Karl Anthony Towns gets traded.
Oh, you know what I'm saying? But that's not bold. That's stupid.
Why is that stupid?
I'll let the listeners answer that question as they're yelling in their cars. That's stupid. Come on, Chris.
How long are you going to lose? He's Boogie with a smile. There's your hot take. There's your hot take. Carl Anthony Towns is DeMarcus Cousins with a smile. All right, that's gonna do it. We got the games going on tonight.
Who's your finals prediction, Chris?
Clippers. I think it will be. You know, I'm a little worried about the Bucks. I really loved Brogdon. I did, and so I know that they are the prohibitive favorite. But I think I'd go Philly.
So you'd go Philly. Clippers, who wins?
Clippers.
Okay, I got Lakers over Sixers in 7. That's my prediction for the finals. Who's your MVP prediction, by the way?
I said Kawhi. So
you're sticking to Kawhi from last
week. Yeah, best player on the best team.
All right.
And he's going to get to play a long time without Paul George.
How about Defensive Player of the Year?
I think the defense for Golden State's going to be so bad, even if Draymond is totally locked in, that they won't get it. I think that you're going to get like all of this shine for some of these teams that don't get it. I think Beverly's going to get in that mix. I think Beverly will get in the mix because it's one of those moments where he is so well liked and he is so intense, you know, as a defender. He's already a guy that gets credit as a defender, and now he's going to be on TV constantly. And, you know, there'll be this groundswell of support because he's on one of the premier teams. And so that would be my dark horse. Obviously, it's always the same, 2-3 guys that are there at the end.
Gobert
and Draymond.
Giannis.
And Kawhi. Yeah.
I'm going with AD.
AD, that's a good one because he said he wanted to win it.
Is that a bold prediction?
No. I mean, he said he wanted to win it. Yeah. I already gave my most improved. I don't expect you to have a most improved. Tatum would be a good one, though.
LeVert was my most improved.
Rookie of the year, we both say Ja.
Yep. Which is sad that Zion is,
it is sad.
Not as serious as a choice anymore.
Okay, last one. Coach of the year.
Michael Malone, Denver.
Oh, interesting. You think that they could do better than last? I mean, they were a 2 seed last year.
I don't know. I think he gets the votes.
Really?
With coach of the year, it's tough because it feels like oftentimes just the best team get the best coach on the best the coach
so
on
Doc
the best
Rivers.
Team. Yeah, exactly. Like that wouldn't be too surprising. Or Frank Vogel. Or Jason, this, maybe it's Jason Kidd by the end of the year.
Who else on that bench? Lionel Hollins on that bench.
Yeah, they got loaded coaching staff with big names.
Yeah, whenever the overthrow takes place, whoever takes over.
It's a weird situation.
I give you one that has a really good chance to win a coach of the year is Quinn Snyder.
Yeah, I originally had him. Because
they could be like, they could end up being like the one seed. You know what I'm saying? If we look up and they've got the best record, it would not. That's not the most stunning thing to me.
They're going
to
be really good.
They're in the mix for the best record. Because they were already awesome and they didn't have Mike Conley. And they didn't have Bogdanovich. And I don't hate what they lost. And I love what they added. And I do think he's a tremendous coach.
I think Utah is the team people aren't talking about enough as a finals candidate.
I agree with you completely. I agree with you. I think Utah is going to be hellacious to knock out in the playoffs, assuming health, as we always have to. Kevin, the season is upon us. By the next time we speak on Friday, we will be talking about games that have already been played.
Yes.
Cannot wait.
Let's go.
I'll talk to you on Friday. Thanks to everybody for listening to another edition of The Mismatch. If you dig what you're hearing, go give us a rating and review on iTunes. 5 stars really helps. And we will talk to you on Friday.